Blog Talk Radio.
Because we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. My name is Matt Weston, and you're listening to Battle Red Radio. Tonight, I'm joined by the biggest, fattest, drunkest of them all, BFD, and the special mysterious guest who probably got spoiled during the 5 o'clock post, Brett Coleman. How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you guys? Make my butt great again, America.
Well, did you know that the NFL draft is this Thursday night?
I did not, no. No, I haven't heard about it for...
That's
12 hours
that's
a day,
surprising.
Last 3 months.
Surprising considering you worked there and everything. It's crazy just how the media doesn't tell us what's going on at all. You know, what are they hiding from us?
Yeah, total lack of information.
It's a conspiracy. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, well, I got my tinfoil hat on, so I'm doing pretty good. But before we start talking about the Houston Texans, there was two very, very important things that happened before the draft has even occurred, and there was two trades that happened. The Titans traded down to 15 with the Rams, who jumped to 1. The Titans also gave up their fourth-round pick as well, too. And the Rams gave up their first-round pick, which was 15th overall, two second-round picks this year, which I believe are 43 and 45, a third this year, which was 76th overall, and a first and third-round pick in 2017. And then the Eagles jumped from 1st to 8th, and to do that, they gave up a third-round pick this year, which was 77th overall, a fourth this year, 100th overall, a first in 2017, a second 2018. So, BFD, of these two trades, which one of these trades do you find the less egregious of the bunch?
I think that, you know, if you look at the Rams, they're in a position that they could – they were in a very odd position because of the RG3 trade, because they built such great depth on defense, even though they lost Janoris Jenkins, that they could afford to make a trade like this. As odd as that sounds, yes, of course they overpaid. But to me, Jared Goff is – if there is one guy in this class, I'm not even talking about quarterbacks necessarily, but mostly, but if you talk about one guy in this class who has the ability to go out and be the face of a franchise, it's Jared Goff. And, you know, we talked about it. I've been bragging on myself about it because I kind of, you know, I said it on the show, is that the Rams are going to tank the season so they can go out and get a 2017 local quarterback to be their new face of the franchise and their new hero. Instead, they just moved it up a year to 2016. They got a local boy who has all the abilities – who has all the ability to start day one and be the face of the franchise, handle that pressure. And frankly, I think he has the potential to be a Pro Bowl. Well, Pro Bowl is like such an iffy word now that Wade Smith made it, right? But an all-pro caliber quarterback, because he has the skills, he has the ability, to drive the ball downfield, he has the football IQ. So if you're going to look at one trade and say, between those two and say, hey, you know what, that was not as bad as it looks on paper, then I got to go for the Rams. They could do it. He is going, and Brett, I'll segue it to you, because, man, what better star do you want for the Hard Knocks show kicking off in the fall? Who else do you want but Jared Goff?
Yeah, Hard Knocks has so many storylines. I mean, it's going to be a great season. To me, the Eagles trade was awful. Completely awful, and I really have no idea what their plan is. You sign Sam Bradford for $18 million a year, and $18 million is kind of the going rate for a starting quarterback nowadays, as we've seen with Brock Osweiler. But clearly, you invested in him to be your starter for the next year, at least, probably 2 years. You bring in Chase Daniel to be a high-priced backup in case Bradford can't get it done. And then you give up a boatload of picks to go up to get presumably Carson Wentz to be your developmental guy on the bench to take over after Bradford and Daniel leave. So why, in their infinite wisdom, if you're going with this plan to develop a quarterback on the bench, would you not just take a high upside guy like Christian Hackenberg or Dak Prescott after the first round? Now, maybe Christian Hackenberg still goes in the first round, but if you don't think he will, why the hell wouldn't you just take him in the second round, save all your picks, get some really good impact players like, you know, Ezekiel Elliott, eighth overall, whatever you want to do. I mean, if your plan isn't to start a rookie,
why the hell are you trading all the way up to get a quarterback who's going to sit on the bench anyway when you could just develop somebody else? Like, I don't get it. It's a horrible, horrible trade.
Yeah, I think personally for me, my favorite thing about the Eagles trade was they were really surprised when Sam Bradford didn't want to play there anymore. Like, they couldn't believe that he wanted to get traded after them kind of throwing the bus and somebody give up so many picks this year and next year and hurt that team's roster for him to go ahead and teach somebody how to play the game for 2 years and then be gone after that. And so that was my favorite kind of thing about that trade. Brett, do you think Goff's like a legitimate number one overall pick, or is this a case where quarterbacks is just the most important position and teams are going to take a quarterback with number one pick whenever they have that need like that?
I mean, I don't hate Jared Goff. I don't think he's ready to start his rookie year. Carson Wentz might be able to start his rookie year. I think he's mentally far ahead of Jared Goff, but Goff has better touch, accuracy, better feet in the pocket, et cetera. It's kind of a Mariota versus Winston thing last year, where Mariota had higher ceiling, Jameis was more ready to play immediately. I think it's a mistake to take Jared Goff number one unless you have a really good plan to sit him during his rookie year, but they don't have a good plan. They have Case Keenum. So he's going to get rocked pretty early in his rookie year. You can only lean on a running back like Todd Gurley so much. They don't have a ton of great receiving weapons. You have Tavon Austin, but he's not really a true number one receiver. You don't have any good tight ends. You have an average offensive line, I would say. Greg Robinson isn't really a franchise left tackle like he was drafted to be. So you're putting a rookie quarterback in here who has no experience in a pro-style offense, and his main weapon is a running back, which if you get behind, may or may not be able to be utilized. So I'm not really – like, I like Jared Goff as a talent, but St. Louis – or not St. Louis, L.A. now, starting his rookie year, I don't like it. I don't like it at all. And I really hope that they find a way to surround him with more talent, but they gave up so many picks that I'm not sure they can do that for a while.
Do you think his pocket presence at all kind of led them not, you know, care as much moving up, where they think that he has this one trait that he's incredible at, so he'll be able to deal with the pass rush, keep his eyes upfield, and even the offensive line is average, he can learn on the fly, and he has the upside where, you know, he'll take some hits or whatever, but he has this one skill that's so good that he could, you make up for the offensive line not get hit as much as often as somebody like, you know, Case Keenum would?
Oh, I absolutely love him in the pocket. I think he's got the best pocket presence of any quarterback in the draft, but he's going to have the best pocket presence because he doesn't really have anybody to throw to and he doesn't have anybody to really protect him, at least consistently. Now, you can have great pocket presence, but it doesn't really make you super elusive. You know, he's still going to have to run for his life. He's still going to have to find somebody to throw to. I'm not saying he's going to be a complete mess his rookie year, but I think Jared Goff on the Rams versus Jared Goff on, say, a team that's more equipped to handle a rookie quarterback would be a completely different story. And
like the Philadelphia Eagles?
I think Jared Goff would do infinitely better on the Eagles than he would on the Rams. Absolutely.
Yeah,
because at least on the Eagles, you got Jordan Matthews, you got Aguilar, you got Lane Johnson as a left tackle. I mean, the Eagles aren't a great team, but it's a much better situation to be in for a rookie quarterback than L.A., by far, absolutely by far.
And that's going to be a really good offensive line this year, too. BFT, do you think Goff and Wentz are kind of like on the level of Mariota and Winston? Or, again, is this just the same thing where quarterbacks are very, very important, we need a quarterback, we're going to trade and get one? Or do you think it's more need, or do you think that they have the talent level similar to those two guys that were taking number one and two last year?
Well, I admit that I have serious questions about Wentz and his ability to adjust from North Dakota State to the pro level. Even in a couple of years, that's a very, very difficult transition, and you're asking a lot from the guy to make that. Because I mean, just think about how fast the game gets from D1 ball, and now we're going to the pros, and now we're going from I can't even remember what division he is. And in college, but I mean, how much faster is the game going to get for him? It's just going to be a blur, at least for the training camp, if not for the first entire year. I mean, that's going to be complete response and rather than thought and response. That's why I don't think it's on the same level as Mariota and Winston, because Winston had played in more or less a pro-style offense. He had the ability. He was already making the reasoned progressions. Mariota, of course, was in the kind of the zone read spread offense. He was not being asked to make a lot of difficult throws downfield, but, you know, Goff was also in a spread, but he was asked to make more difficult throws downfield. So they are still contrasting quarterbacks because of the systems they came from, the experiences they had. I see just Wentz as like two steps down on the development threshold, though.
What about you, Ben? Do you have the same similar opinion as BFD does, or do you think these guys are you kind of ready to start now like Winston and Mariota did?
I think if you look at the last two draft classes with the top two quarterbacks, there's Winston clearly at the top, clearly, and then a giant gap, and then Carson Wentz, and then another gap, and Goff and Mariota are basically the same thing to me. They have different skill sets, but in terms of the grade, they're basically the same grade. And Mariota did better than I expected in his rookie year, but I still need to see him take on more responsibility in a pro-style offense before I deem him, you know, the next big thing. Goff is going to have that same hurdle. I'm going to need to see how much control he has over an NFL offense in his rookie year before I can figure out exactly how good he's going to be. Winston has already proven he's going to be a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback for a very long time. Wentz, I think, has a better chance to be that than Goff, at least based on his experience in pro-style concepts. But none of them outside of Winston, I think, is a slam dunk franchise quarterback. None of them.
Okay. Well, but I mean, you work for the NFL Network, and you maybe hear some rumors and stuff. Going back to the Eagles, do you think they trade Sam Bradford, and who do you think they end up trading him to?
I mean, it's going to be tough to stomach for them because there's a lot of money tied up in him. So I don't think they're going to trade him because they basically just lose $11 million for nothing.
Yeah.
Their plan seems to be start Bradford and develop Wentz. And if they trade Bradford, that plan goes to shit because then you got to start Chase Daniel and you lose $11 million of your cap space and you get absolutely nothing out of Sam Bradford. Maybe you get a second or third round pick, maybe, but would you really spend $11 million of cap space to get an extra second round pick and have Chase Daniel be your starter? I don't know about that. So I don't think he's going to be traded. I think he's going to report eventually. And he'll probably just use this season to advertise himself to get a big money deal next year.
Yeah, and one more thing about the Bradford situation, who's actually going to trade for him? I realize that there's a lot of teams really, really extraordinarily hard up for a quarterback, looking at you, Broncos. But, you know, Sam Bradford at this point in time has a very clear track record of low average at best play. And so who's going to give up a second rounder for him? I mean, why wouldn't you, if you're that team, why wouldn't you take Dak Prescott and go, you know, just screw it. Here, Dak, go do something out on the field. Great. Lovely. Pat on the butt. So why pay Sam Bradford to do kind of a nothing burger for you? He's just not going to give you that great a play.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Sam Bradford's the biggest hack in the entire history of the NFL, where he's pretty much made $78 million just by being a number one overall pick with potential. He's never showed that much production aside from that rookie year. He was, you know, pretty okay. And then the thing is, like, his potential never showed any tangible results because he was injured all the time. So there's still that potential. Who knows what he can do because he's a former number one overall pick. He doesn't play enough to show that, he is probably really bad. And so somehow he's conned his way to $78 million. So I kind of hope he never gets another shot. I hope this whole thing goes miserable for him. And, I just don't like the idea of what he's been able to get away with for so long. Having a solution, being a good quarterback, when it's pretty obvious that he's not. Especially when you play in Chip Kelly's system and all those easy open throws, and he just couldn't throw the ball downfield. And all of the entire offense is, you know, set around that. BFT, so again, going back to both these two trades, do you think these trades are more the case of the need for the quarterback position, like I've said, you know, three times, or is this more the you know, Rams and Browns, the Browns especially being more analytically inclined, but them kind of understanding that the NFL draft, you know, is mostly kind of a crapshoot where it's better to have a lot of picks than one really high pick. So then that way you get more lottery balls and you have more chance to, you know, get really great players. In addition to that, you can have more younger players on cheaper contracts that you can do more things with rather than having to pay, you know, older guys for $10 million a year who may get injured, who may retire early or whatever, and not get the production out of them you can that you could get with somebody who's 23 years old, the chance to button something more than that. So do you think, again, do you think this is the case of teams understand that trading down is really good and you should do this, like, you know, the Patriots have done, like how the 49ers built their team, or is this just teams really need quarterbacks nowadays?
I think it's a combination. So taking from the Browns' perspective, this is the ultimate in carpet bombing for roster talent, right? It's just, we're going to trade everything at the top, and just so we can have more picks. I mean, this is I remember back in the days that Battle Red started up, is that the very first mock draft we did in the 2006 offseason, 2007, I'm sorry, the first mock draft we did for that one, we traded, I think, back three times or something with our pick. I mean, we were just collecting picks. And it was really funny because the SBN management at the time was just like, you guys have to make a pick. I was like, no, this is what we want to do. We have no talent on this team. We got to get talent, for crikey's sake. And it was actually quite entertaining. And for the record, we traded back and took Joe Staley with our left tackle. And we made some pretty dadgum good picks. So we got our franchise left tackle at that draft. That was pretty awesome. So that's from the Browns' perspective. From the Eagles' perspective, Howie Roseman, I think that's the GM's name, really he had a focus when he took over for Chip Kelly. And the focus was, oh, my God, Chip Kelly took a gallon of gasoline, doused it over the franchise, and lit it on fire. And I've got to do something about all these obnoxious contracts. And so he went out and did a fantastic job getting rid of the D'Amico Murrays of the world. Then he turns around and signs Sam Bradford to the extension, which was, And then you know, we have this massive trade up for Carson Wentz. So if you're on Team Brett and you think that Carson Wentz has high upside, then it's a good trade if you're on that. I happen to be on the other side of that fence, not being a big fan of Carson Wentz. So if that is your guy and you see the talent, then I don't think it's unreasonable to trade that many picks to get a guy, because you can look at it from the carpet bombing standpoint that, look, if I draft enough dudes, I'm going to hit one. But before week one begins, your roster's down to 53. You have only so much opportunity to give guys to succeed. With the 53-man roster, three quarterbacks, there's only so many snaps that can go around. So if at some point you have to say, that's my guy, you get all the training camp snaps, you get the action, go. And that's what I think the Eagles are doing with it, right or wrong.
For me, when I look at the Eagles and Browns trade, the thing that jumps out to me on Cleveland's side is it's great to trade down if you're a talent deficient team and you need a bunch of players. It's great to trade down, get those extra first-round picks, try to get some extra studs, fill out your roster. But in order for that to work, you have to pick the right players. And Cleveland has been notorious for trading down and picking the wrong players for several years now, whether it comes to basically giving away Julio Jones to get nobody. You know, you take Trent Richardson and Brandon Whedon the next year. You know,
and they trade back
last
up
year,
in that same draft, too.
Yeah,
they trade down.
They trade back up in the same draft. A couple years ago, you trade down from 4. You could have had Khalil Mack or Sammy Watkins, two Pro Bowl caliber or All-Pro caliber players. You had your pick of the litter. You trade down, and keep in mind they still had an extra first-round pick. They traded down and took Justin Gilbert and Johnny Manziel. It's inexcusable. The year after that, you take Cam Irving, who's a good center prospect, and Danny Shelton, who's a nose tackle. Jury's still out on them. But all of their trade downs, all of them, and they've got basically nothing to show for it. So it's great to get more picks. If you're passing up on elite talent, it's great to get more picks because you feel like you need depth over elite talent. But if you're picking the wrong depth players, there's really nothing your franchise can do. And that's on Cleveland, and I really hope for their sakes that getting yet another draft haul out of their top 5 pick, that they finally, for once, actually pick the right players. because it won't work if you don't pick the right players.
Yeah, but I guess kind of the counter argument to that is that, well, you know, they're Cleveland. They're not very good at picking players, and so they made a mess of that number fourth overall pick anyways, so why not get two chances to try and get somebody? And I also think it's kind of, you know, they could have done something like what the Raiders did where they got, you know, Khalil Mack and Derek Carr with their picks. I guess they couldn't got Mack, but the Vikings had that draft where they got Anthony Barr and, you know, Bridgewater. They could have done something similar as those two teams. They just missed. And if they took Bridgewater and then if they took – I'm blanking on some really good players in that draft. It's been so long. But if they hit, you know, it would be a completely different story. And also that it's a new front office. It's a new GM. It's a new coach. And so I think it's better for them to not take a quarterback that high, not draft somebody that high, come back down. Then next year that they can see what they have in RG3 this year, lose a bunch of games if they have to, draft high again next year, have another number one pick, another high first-round pick also, and then – you know, build like that and build younger, cheaper contracts. So I'm completely fine with the Browns pick. I do think this is just a case mostly of teams wanting quarterbacks and teams needing quarterbacks more than teams trading down because they understand analytics were important. I think maybe in the Browns case you can make some of that argument, especially if they trade down again, which may probably occur. But other than that, I just think teams really need quarterback play and they're going to do anything they can to get it, especially when you can get a young guy who may be – have more of a wild card factor, but the contract being that much cheaper, where at most you're going to pay him $5 million, rather than having to pay $18 million for Bradford or Brock Osweiler. So, well, I guess
if that was for me, I was talking to my son. Sorry.
No, I just had to pause, so I was going to go on to the next thing. So.
Okay, go for it.
All right, well, that's enough talk about this, you know, trade. I think we kind of covered everything as much as we need to. So now let's start talking about the AFC South. And Houston's the defending champion. The Jaguars are very young, very talented. The Titans are, you know, have a greater chance to rebuild and already have a young quarterback they can build behind. And they have tons of picks also. And the Colts have the top quarterbacks, a lot of aging veterans, but they, you know, kind of stood pat this year. So, Brett, in this division, which team has the most to gain in this draft? And which one are you most worried about coming after the AFC South Championship if they are able to, you know, hit a draft pick? And then I guess maybe one more question. Which player are you really afraid going to that team that you're talking about?
Well, for me, all three questions can be answered with the same team. I think the Jaguars have the most to gain. They have the best chance of coming after the Texans for the division crown. And the player that I think – answers those two questions is Jalen Ramsey, who's the one that I don't want to go to the Jaguars the most. Their biggest problem in the past 2 years has been stopping DeAndre Hopkins. And even if they put solid defensive efforts up against everybody else on the team, they have not been able to stop DeAndre Hopkins. Even if their offense hasn't been able to do anything against the Texans' defense, they could still be in the game if it weren't for DeAndre Hopkins. And they have an opportunity now to draft a corner at fifth overall in Jalen Ramsey who can stop DeAndre Hopkins, or at least limit DeAndre Hopkins. He's the best press corner, at least the best athlete at press corner to come out since Patrick Peterson. And he still has some technical things to work out in terms of how he handles releases at the line of scrimmage with his feet. You can clearly tell he plays corner like a safety because he's not super experienced in the position. But in terms of his athletic gifts, his instincts, his range, he is Jacksonville's best hope, perhaps the best hope they're ever going to get to stop DeAndre Hopkins for the next decade. And if he goes there, and it's starting to look like he might, that's going to be a problem. And Houston's going to have to invest in their offense so that they'll have somebody else to go to other than Hopkins in those Jacksonville games. Because Ramsey's the kind of player that can take him away. And if you take away Hopkins from this offense like we saw in last season, they kind of got nothing else. So it's going to be a good pick, counter pick between Houston and Jacksonville this year because it's two very young, very talented teams that I think are going to be contending for the division in 2016.
Okay, cool. I didn't understand that you had Ramsey that high and felt that strongly about him. BFD, who – What about you? Where you answer these three questions? Who are you most afraid of? Which player are you afraid going there? And which team you think is going to be has the most to gain in this draft?
I think it's the same across the board for me. You know, when I did my mock draft, not this weekend, I had Ramsey going to sliding to the Jaguars. If you have, we already know we've got Goff and Wentz 1 and 2. That's the worst kept secret right now in the league. I have the Chargers taking either Tunsil or Stanley. I think they're going to go left tackle. It's really King Dunlap really isn't an answer at left tackle for the Chargers anymore. I think the Cowboys go Joey Bosa. I think that because they have no DeMarcus Lawrence and they have no Randy Gregory the first 4 weeks of the season. And, you know, I think that's a potential draft pick there. So you got Jalen Ramsey sliding to the Jaguars. And like Brett said, all of a sudden, wait a minute, the Jaguars secondary has gone from just awful trash to adding Tayshaun Gibson, Princeton McNamara, now Jalen Ramsey. So wait a minute, that's not bad. It's not great, but it's not a bad group of in the secondary. So that's a little scary. And I think if you're gonna try to make the argument, and I keep seeing it made over and over again, that Blake Bortles is still absolute trash, I think you're just being obtuse at this point. I think you're just looking for an excuse to make fun of him. Yes, Blake Bortles still throws 3 to 4 really stupid passes a game. You know what? If he makes that 2 to 3 passes a game, he's an average quarterback. If he goes Schaub and makes one stupid pass a game, he is a very, very good quarterback in the NFL. That's the difference between a slightly below average and a very good quarterback is 3 passes a game. And that's something that can be fixed, and he started turning that corner last year. So Jaguars, I think, are scary. And even if, you know, depending on the medical reports, even if they go Miles Jack, wait a minute, we've upgraded another position. So they have a lot to gain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Bulls is kind of interesting, too, where it's turnovers are worth about 4 points if you go by win probability added. And whenever you look at Bortles, if he, you know, 3 turnovers, that's 12 points right there. And that's more than one possession. But the idea that he's trying, he does make, you know, 3-4 just completely idiotic throws. So that Texans game, the interception, the end zone, he threw in, you know, triple coverage. Those sorts of things can occur. But, and you make fun of his accuracy and stuff, but he can run very well. He's fast and he has a really good arm. And he has 2 wide receivers he can throw the ball up to. And, you know, it's the same thing with Winston with that, you know, great Sam Beach volleyball team he has in. He has for his 2 top wide receivers. And the same thing with Bortles. He just has to get in their target and they can bring the ball in. And that, they try and knock Bortles down for that, but it's just what how their skills interlap and how you build a football team. And not everybody's been perfect at everything. For me, I think Jacksonville is the most to gain. And I'm really scared. Yeah, I'm mostly afraid of them getting another pass rusher because that's the one thing that they don't have. And with them, also with Dunlap coming this year, where their secondary was bad, but their pass rush is so much worse that if they get a pass rush, the secondary that's been bad for so long, you know, may actually be kind of competent. You know, Devon House isn't a horrible quarterback, even though DeAndre Hopkins swapped his butt with him. But he can, you know, he can play pretty good man coverage. Their safety play is all right. But there's just no pass rush at all, and they're covering guys forever. And so if they get a pass rush, this may be actually, you know, a top 15 defense, something they haven't had since 2010. And I still think the Colts are the favorite as far as taking on the Texans in the division. I mean, Andrew Luck's an all-world quarterback. He's going to be an all-world quarterback probably this year again. I think last year he was trying to do too much, and his offensive line was bad and that sort of thing. And so I think this year he's going to be, you know, very good again, and it's going to be very scary. And we'll be like, oh, my God, who is this monster that, you know, that wasn't here last year? And recency bias is very strong in the NFL. So I'm most afraid of the Colts, and I'm afraid of I can't remember what I said. But what do you ask? What about you, Brad? Do you think Andrew Luck's gonna be really good this year? Are you afraid of the Colts at all?
I mean, if they get an offensive line, or more specifically, if they get interior offensive linemen to protect him, I mean, he's still got weapons. Still got Dante Moncrief. Still got Philip Dorsett. Still got T.Y. Hilton. I mean, they still have weapons. They still have a franchise quarterback. And as soon as they start actually protecting him, yeah, of course, they can beat anybody. Defensively, they still got work to do. I think their defensive line is good enough to stop the run, but none of them can rush the passer. Their outside linebackers, again, they can stop the run, but none of them can rush the passer. Freeman going to Chicago was a huge loss for them against the run at linebacker. And they have one good corner in Vontae Davis. So they need pass rushers. They need a new inside linebacker. They need a number two corner. They need safeties. I mean, Adams is ancient in defensive back years. They have a lot of work to do. And I'm interested to see where they go in this draft because there's a ton of needs and presumably going to be a ton of talent there. So they're kind of one of the biggest wild cards when you look at them sitting at the 18th pick because they can basically go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if there's one team that really does not have a plan, I mean, if I were to look at one team, it's the Colts. They don't know. From a personnel standpoint, they're just clueless. I mean, I see no plan. I see no structure. I see nothing. It's like Gregson wakes up and goes, you know, we really need more speed at wide receiver. And just ignores the offensive line, ignores the defensive line, ignores the secondary. I mean, Vontae Davis, that was less strategy and planning than it was just lucky into a guy who happened to turn it around. So, you know, this, I see no plan for the Colts. That's why they don't scare me at all, is because they're just, from a personnel strategy standpoint, they don't know what the hell they're doing. They don't.
Well, I like how they're
saying the same thing.
I like how their plan was with Peyton Manning. We didn't run the ball, play defense well enough. So let's make sure we do that with Andrew Luck instead of understanding that the best thing you have with Andrew Luck is having to throw the ball downfield as far as he can, like what Bruce Arians did with him. And so they completely kind of like handicapped and screwed the whole thing up. And then there was something hilarious too, because he made that pick because he realized, oh, T.Y. Hilton's going to be a free agent in 3 years, and we need to have somebody who can replace him, which is just, you know, insane. What are you saying, Brett?
Well, I was saying more, it's the same thing, like the Colts literally have not changed since Peyton Manning was drafted. They have been doing the same thing for 20 years, which is, oh, we have a franchise quarterback, but we don't need anything else. Our quarterback's good enough to get us the Super Bowl. And a couple of times it worked. Their roster building has been extremely below average for a very long time. And we saw, I mean, the same thing that happened in 2011. You know, the year that they tanked to get Luck. Without Peyton Manning, they were a shitty football team. And now without Andrew Luck, they were a shitty football team. Because they have no depth. Outside of quarterback, they have very few players that I would consider studs. I mean, they have a receiving core, but that was basically it. Just a very, very poor roster construction from top to bottom. I would take Jacksonville and Houston as a roster, not looking at the quarterback position, but just in terms of how the rest of their roster is constructed, Indianapolis is so far behind Jacksonville and Houston, it's not even funny. And that's all on Ryan Gregson.
Mm-hmm. But I guess that's kind of has been a knock on Houston these last three years. They've had the same talented roster since 2010. I mean, this is pretty much Kubiak's team still, aside from the quarterback position. Whenever you look at where their best players are, I mean, you can maybe include Clowney and Kevin Johnson, but even Clowney hasn't played enough to really warrant him that being that big of an impact guy. But they just haven't, you know, fixed that quarterback position. Now in the AFC South, you may have three. I mean, you have one for sure, all-pro quarterback in Luck, maybe one in Bortles, or maybe a Pro Bowl quarterback, probably not all-pro in Bortles, and probably the same thing in Mariota. And so now it's kind of the Texans are having to keep up with them. And they did that by, you know, signing Osweiler. And, I mean, the thing with Osweiler is the facts are he was average last year in his chance in Denver. He played Kubiak's offense, which is known for creating open throws for the quarterback. And he was in a pretty advantageous situation there. And, you know, it was kind of weird coming in playing behind Manny, but he still has had, you know, three or four years to prepare and sit back there and learn. And you'd expect for him to probably be better than he was, but he was just average. And so now in Houston, he's getting paid, I believe his cap hit this year is $18 million, but his base salary is $12 million. And he's pretty much on a two-year deal where he can either, you know, prove it and get to play year three, year four in Houston, or he's going to be gone after 2 years. And so kind of setting this up, Brett, do you think the Texans should draft a quarterback this year? And if so, when should they do that?
I mean, if they're going to draft anybody, it would probably be a late-round guy just because you invested so much in Brock Osweiler. You still have Tom Savage developing. You already have Brandon Whedon signed. They don't really need to draft a quarterback unless there's some sort of insane high upside value with a guy like Prescott, who's so athletic with a great arm, somebody who they can sit for, you know, 2 or 3 years until Savage moves on. So I really don't think they take a quarterback. I don't really think there's a use for that. Maybe you look at it next year if Brock somehow disappoints. But the thing with Osweiler, and you know, people expecting him to just be average, and there's the Hoyer Osweiler numbers comparison that people keep throwing out. That's a load of shit to me. You look at Hoyer and you look at Osweiler, just looking at the games, just physically watching them with your eyes, they're different quarterbacks. Osweiler actually looked in control of the offense. Hoyer never once looked in control of this offense. He was panicking in the pocket, making ill-advised throws. Osweiler made a couple stupid throws, and he held on the ball too long and took some stupid sacks, but he never looked completely lost like Brian Hoyer did. And yes, they had very similar stats, but what people are failing to understand is that Brock Osweiler's stats were average before the Bill O'Brien effect. It took Bill O'Brien, who has very clearly proven himself to get the best out of his quarterbacks, it took Bill O'Brien that much effort to get Hoyer just to play average, whereas Brock Osweiler was playing average right out of the box. So you put Osweiler, somebody who's that talented, under Bill O'Brien with the Bill O'Brien effect, average is less than what I would expect. Bill O'Brien has been steadily giving his quarterbacks kind of, you know, plus 25% quarterback rating increases or whatever the average is of quarterbacks that go from different teams to O'Brien and his effect on them. So if I'm expecting Osweiler to be 25% more effective with, instead of a 2-to-1 touchdown interception ratio, a 3-to-1 interception radio ratio, I mean, that's good. That's a good thing. So I expect Brock Osweiler to be better this year than he was last year, simply because Bill O'Brien is his coach, and Bill O'Brien gets the best out of his quarterbacks. And the second argument people use against Osweiler is, oh, he had such a great supporting cast in Denver, and he was still only putting up average numbers. The supporting cast in Denver is his defense. Offensively, they have two good receivers. That's it. They have Demaryius Thomas, who was dropping a shitload of balls last year. He didn't look like himself. And you have Emmanuel Sanders, who was the better of the two last year. Outside of that, they really don't have anything. C.J. Anderson is a decent running back. Ronnie Hillman is a decent running back. They don't have a franchise running back. They had no offensive linemen that I would consider as good as anyone on the Texans' offensive line, outside of the departed center position. We don't really know what we got in Bergstrom. Their offensive line in Denver was really bad, really bad. So if you have two receivers, one of which is dropping a ton of passes to throw to, and no offensive line, and an okay running back core, how is that somehow a great supporting cast? That's the argument I don't get. Peyton Manning had a great supporting cast. Peyton Manning had a great offensive line, Julius Thomas, Demaryius Thomas at his best, Emmanuel Sanders at his best, he had Eric Decker, Wes Welker before a bunch of concussions. Peyton Manning had a great supporting cast. Brock Osweiler did not.
I mean, I found the supporting cast to be good. You know, I think a lot of drops Thomas kind of had, it was like being mad about the Texans receivers last year for all their drops. Whenever the passes are coming out funky, balls are being thrown at their feet, they're being thrown high. Those all count as drops. And I think it's kind of similar to Thomas last year with how you main through the football. I mean, whenever you run that zone scheme, whoever your running backs are don't necessarily matter as much. But both, you know, Hillman and Anderson were pretty good one-cut backs. And, you know, Anderson pretty much won that New England game in the snow and overtime where he had those two toss plays. And Sanders was very good. But, it's, you know, the numbers take in every single snap that Osweiler had that year, every single thing he did. And obviously, film-wise, you know, Hoyer's numbers were, you know, extremely overstated because of what he did in garbage time, and those still count for the numbers. And so Osweiler was better than Hoyer last year, but he was still, you know, average in a good situation. It wasn't the greatest situation of all time. It wasn't the situation that Manning had, but it was still, you know, a good situation with opportunity, you know, to succeed. And you would expect I just expected for him to be better than he was last year in that thing. And it made the switch to, you know, the worst quarterback in the NFL that much easier for Kubiak too. So, I mean, I expect him to be better in Houston. I do think, you know, this offensive line is probably better. Depending if they draft a wide receiver or not, the wide receiver core is going to be better also because, you know, DeAndre Hopkins is their best receiver in the league. Lamar Miller is better. Bill O'Brien's, you know, done well with head coaches. But, you know, we're still talking about you're going to pay a guy $18 million to be above average. And, you know, it's still, like, is he going to be Matthew Stafford, because that's what they're paying him to be, is kind of a question for him moving forward. And so for me, I would like to see them draft a quarterback, bench him, draft him maybe in the second round or so, bench him and teach him for, 2 years. And then if Osweiler's, not good in year three, you're going to be able to hedge your bet, move on right away. And if he is good, then you can trade that guy for, another second-round pick or first-round pick in the future, because everybody needs quarterbacks. You just see the need for him, or two second-round picks and that sort of thing. And I think they should cut Savage, because it's pretty obvious he's not, a whole lot of anything. They wouldn't have put him on IR if his shoulder was hurt last year with their quarterback situation if they didn't want the extra roster spot, because they didn't expect anything out of him this year or the last year. And he also wasn't that great in college too. So I would like to see a quarterback take in the second round because of that. And then sit on the bench, go ahead and teach and learn. And then if Osweiler's not good, you're ready to move on and have that transition go again. Because if not, Houston's going to keep spinning their tires in the mud, another 2 years of this quarterback situation. BFG, what are your thoughts? You think the Texans should draft a quarterback early at all?
Well, yeah, I've put my foot in the sand. Is that, I watched, I think, six of Osweiler's starts last year. And, it's a small sample size. Granted, I had film than Brett does. I have issues with his accuracy, his decision making. His mechanics are pretty bad. It's really weird seeing a guy who's 6'8" throw from shoulder below his clavicle, like very often. That's where his release is coming from. It's just a very, very odd motion, and it really diminishes his height factor. He's a tall guy. He's a big target. And that was the really weirdest thing for me when Bill O'Brien signed him. He said he can take hits. It wasn't, we feel like he's got a big arm and can make throws down the field. It was, he can take hits. And that was just kind of weird, too. Is that, like, the point of a quarterback is to take hits? Is that his above-average skill? So I'm not a big Brock Osweiler fan. I wasn't going before the season or before the signing. I'm not going to change my mind now just because we signed him. So, what I have the biggest problem with is the contract. It's a contract that lacks commitment, that lacks real faith. And so if you don't take a quarterback early, you might put yourself in a pretty poor position long-term. If you do take a quarterback early, the second that Osweiler struggles, there's going to be calls for Paxton Lynch, bring him in. So it's a situation that, to me, that lacks confidence, that lacks commitment, and it's like one of those feelings that you get. It's like something's going to go wrong. It's just what's going to go wrong, and that's what I get from this.
Well, Brian, in this hypothetical situation, the Texans do draft a quarterback early. Which guys do you like? I know you really like Christian Hackenberg, but do you like Prescott? Do you like Driscoll? What are the guys you kind of like? Maybe not necessarily even the second round, but maybe in the fourth round, fifth round or so.
That's for you,
Prescott,
Brett.
Is somebody I like. I don't hate Prescott, at least as a developmental pick. He reminds me a lot of Tyrod Taylor. He's somebody coming from a non-pro style offense, so he needs at least 2 years on the bench. But athletically, the kid can run. He's got a cannon for an arm. He's a great leader. By all accounts, a bright person, just no experience in the kind of offense that Bill O'Brien runs. I would never, ever draft him to be a rookie starter. But in terms of the developmental potential, I do like Dak Prescott a lot. There's the DUI, obviously, that people are going to have to reconcile with. But I don't think he's a bad kid. I think he just did a really stupid mistake, and he doesn't have a history of making those kind of stupid mistakes. So I'm kind of giving him the benefit of the doubt that he just had a really stupid moment. But I think he is somebody that's worth a look on the third day of the draft, if he's even there. If they really feel that high on him, maybe they spend a fourth-round pick and kind of – push Brandon Weeden to the wayside and have Tom Savage kind of be the backup for the next 2 years before he tries to sign somewhere else to win a starting job. And then you have Dak Prescott come in to be the backup, possibly the heir apparent to Osweiler. Who knows what their plan is? We won't really know for a couple years because everything in the quarterback situation depends on how well Osweiler plays anyway. But if you're looking for a developmental quarterback, Prescott's probably my favorite in the draft.
Okay.
Let me pile on real fast and say I agree with that. That if you're going to take a chance on somebody just on the physical talents alone, then Prescott is that guy. He's one of those guys that it's just he's fun to watch. He was fun to watch in college. He's got just skills, and it's a matter of learning the system. But man, what a physical specimen!
Yeah, I mean, even if you take him, you could run that, you know, dumb wild bull offense and put him back there because B.J. Daniels is gone. They have nobody to run that at all. So you can provide some mix-up or so whenever if Oswald gets hurt, you can run the ball 40 times a game too. And so that's also an idea there. Well, I guess we can move on to some more kind of quicker questions and what Houston's going to do. Brad, who are some targets you like for them to take in the first round? And who do you think they're going to take in the first round this year? And that's also a question that we have from El Torito. He's wondering who they're going to pick. So let me know who you think they're going to pick and what possible targets are also available there.
I mean, it's looking more and more like a wide receiver. So it's one of them between, you know, Coleman, Treadwell, Doxson, maybe Will Fuller. I doubt it's Will Fuller, but maybe Will Fuller. You know, it's looking almost like a lock that they're going to take a wide receiver in the first round. I prefer Corey Coleman out of all of them just simply because he gives a good complementary skill set to DeAndre Hopkins. He's a burner, runs 4.35, and more than just having long speed, he has speed through the first 10 yards of his route too, in that he eats cushion instantly. And it's not just about how far you run 40 yards. It is about how far you run 10 yards and getting on top of corners very, very quickly, get them to turn their hips immediately because that opens up hitches underneath. It opens up slants. It opens up double moves. How fast you can get on top of a corner a lot of the times determines how far you can get free downfield. And so he has both the short speed and the long speed. He's exceptional after the catch. He's a utility player in terms of he plays running back. You can put him on sweeps. He threw the ball a little bit on gadget plays for Baylor. He returned punts. He returned kicks. I mean, he is a true four-down weapon that this team doesn't have. And I think if he's there at 22, you pull the trigger, you don't look back, and you give Osweiler somebody else to throw to besides Hopkins that can beat Jacksonville's secondary, assuming they take Jalen Ramsey, that can take away a safety when Tennessee decides to double Hopkins, that can actually get open when Vontae Davis goes up against Hopkins. I mean, everybody is game planning against DeAndre Hopkins. You have to get somebody else who can win, and Corey Coleman's that guy.
You can't forget Cecil Shorts also. BFD, who do you think they're going to take in the first round? Who do you like?
The one thing that keeps – and I get it, but one thing that I keep kind of getting hung up on is what about Jalen Strong? Is that he put up a 4.38 40. He's 6'2". He can go get the ball at the point of attack, field. He can do a lot of the things that Corey Coleman can. So it seems like there's a little bit of redundancy there. Now, that said, who do I think the Texans are going to go get? You have to, if you're looking, if you're reading between the lines, it's probably Corey Coleman. I mean, it's you know, they had the extended workout. I also think Josh Doxson is way up on that list. I keep falling back on this, and I think it's just specious logic, and I'm cool with that in this case. But I think any rumors of Will Fuller coming to the Texans is just bullshit because he is a very risky pick, and Bill O'Brien is extremely risk-averse. That is not the kind of guy Bill O'Brien would go for. So I think he's off the table, and I just hope that I'm just mentally justifying that in some manner. I have said – go ahead.
Patterson 2 years ago too. And kind of similar guy also. He's a physical guy, great athlete, but not necessarily a great receiver. And they took DeAndre Hopkins instead, and they value the ability to play football. For me, I do think the team
Hold on. Let me go with who I want to take. I would love to replace Jared Crick with an athletic defensive end, somebody who can play all four down or all three downs. I don't want a two-down guy. I'm not taking a two-down guy in the first round. My NT lust is over, done with. I need me a guy who can play three downs. So I would love to see Vernon Butler or Chris Jones with that pick. If I'm mostly convinced Chris Jones can play all three downs. I know Vernon Butler can. I would love to see it. But to me, replacing the black hole of production that was Jared Crick with somebody who can even give me replacement level play makes that defensive line downright nasty. We don't have to go to this 1-3-7 lineup that we were running or 1-4-6 lineup that we were running defensively, because the only defensive lineman we could actually put out on third down was J.J. Watt. It allows us to be a little bit bulkier, a little bit more protected against the run. We saw how burned we were against the run when we got so light. So I'd love to go with a defensive end, a three-down defensive end, somebody who can get me to the quarterback and who can help on run defense. Go ahead.
I wouldn't mind
defensive line either.
Yeah, I think they take I'm sorry about that. I was just going to say real fast, I think they do take a wide receiver, but if I would like to see them trade back, though, into the second round and get an extra second, third-round pick, and just kind of, because I think they just have a lot of holes, you know. They could use a safety, a defensive end, a center, a tight end, a kick returner. And I would, you know, everything that you hear, that there's a lot of, you know, good defensive linemen. The Alabama center is really good. He's going to be there in the second round. You can always get kick returners in the fourth round. Same thing with tight end, maybe Harvey Hunter from Arkansas as well in the second round. So I think there's a lot of options there. So I would like to see them trade back, but I do think they take a wide receiver. Go ahead, Brett.
Well, no, I completely agree with you about Ryan Kelly. I think he's a great center. I don't think he would even be there at 22, though. There's a lot of buzz that he might actually go to the Colts at 18, which wouldn't be a terrible pick. In regards to receiver for the Texans, though, there was a thing I saw today regarding Laquon Treadwell, who's mostly been linked to the Vikings, but now all of a sudden being linked to the Texans along with Will Fuller. And this is a quote that I saw from an AFC college scouting director, an unnamed AFC college scouting director, who said about Treadwell, quote, "I love seeing those 40 times. I was glad he ran that. Let him fall to us. He's a 4-6 receiver all day, always was, but that's how he plays too. That's the difference. He also plays hot. He wants to get after you. We drafted a name redacted, and it was the same thing. They killed him for the 40s. When we got to him, we just smiled because we knew we had something special. Treadwell is old school. I'll take him." So if you're being an AFC college scouting director.
Wow, what a spoiler.
So it's a college scouting director who's saying, oh, yeah, we had this great receiver fall to us because 40 times. My mind is immediately going to DeAndre Hopkins.
What was DeAndre's 40 time? It was 4.53, wasn't it?
4.57.
4.57, okay.
They killed him for it. They absolutely – because that was your Cordarrelle Patterson and Tavon Austin blew up the combine. Everybody completely forgot about Hopkins because he ran that 4.57. The Texans took him when he fell. They were giddy about it, and all of a sudden he's an all-pro, or at least all-pro caliber receiver. So I look at that quote, and I can't really think of any other AFC teams that have recently taken a receiver that fell due to a slow 40 time. So I'm thinking that's a Houston quote. And if it's legitimate, this Treadwell to Houston thing might be real. So it's something to keep an eye on Thursday, that if he's there, if both Treadwell and Coleman are on the board at 22, which one do they take? And I honestly don't know at this point.
Yeah, that
so, so what do you do?
So, so watch the draft on Thursday.
So what do we – I mean, so let's say you have three wide receivers. You've got Treadwell, Hopkins, and Strong. I mean,
And Cease with Shorts, too.
Why do you keep saying that name? So you've got three guys who have I think Jalen Strong's probably the most athletic of the three, but those are three very complementary skill – or, I'm sorry – I'm curious for your answer. Is that, Brett, what do you think about that? Is that lack of diversification talent wise from your wide receiver position, is that a bad thing?
I mean, it's not like his pro comparison. Treadwell, ironically, is DeAndre Hopkins. I don't think he's as good as DeAndre was coming out of school, but then again, I thought he was the best receiver in that draft class, and he's proven to be. But his pro comp is DeAndre Hopkins, and I would never say that having two of DeAndre Hopkins is a bad thing. I do think having diversity in a wide receiving core is good, because if you're going up against a secondary that has big press corners that match up well with big
physical receivers. It's nice to have a speed receiver or an undersized, quicker receiver that can take advantage of big, lanky corners. So if you're going up against that kind of defense, you have a weapon that you can exploit. Or if you're going up against smaller, faster corners like you see in Atlanta that match up better with, say, Corey Coleman, to have a guy like DeAndre Hopkins that can just out-muscle for them for the ball, you know, having diverse weapons that work against different kinds of defenses is something I advocate for. But I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing to have three big jump ball receivers. You know, they all have big catch radiuses that can help bail out Brock Osweiler. That's, again, it's not bad. It's not what I would do, but it's not bad. And that's part of the reason why I think Sterling Shepard, if they don't go receiver in the first round, Sterling Shepard's almost a lock to go to the Texans in round two, because all of a sudden you have a deficiency at slot receiver with the best slot receiver prospect in the draft sitting right there in the second round. I mean, that would be a match made in heaven if they passed up on a guy like Coleman or Treadwell in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at it from one more perspective, so you've got DeAndre and you've got Treadwell on the outside. Is Jalen Strong, is he your slot? Does he have the skill set to play that?
I mean, there is such a thing in the league called a big slot, which kind of evolved in the last couple of years as a counter to these smaller, quicker nickel corners that went up against the smaller, quicker slot receivers that kind of emerged because of the New England. It's weird how the league's kind of evolved like that, where all of a sudden Wes Welker was destroying defenses, so everybody made it a point to go get a nickel corner. And there are all these small, quick guys that can match up with Wes Welker. So then you see it a lot with the Cowboys. They started putting Dez Bryant in the slot that could just beat the shit out of these small slot corners, particularly Brandon Boykin that the Eagles got to stop those slot receivers. And they call it a big slot because it's so easy for them, you know, if you're running the slot fade, because all of a sudden you got so much space to the outside, those big corners were going to win almost every time, or those big receivers are going to win almost every time against a small corner. So that is a thing you can do. It is a concept that teams have started to employ, is having a big slot receiver. So I don't think Jalen Strong is a bad fit to play inside in this offense because he does have that skill set. He does have speed. He does have leaping ability. You know, it would be a good matchup against certain teams. And if you're going up against a team that maybe has a bigger slot corner, like, you know, the Texans with Kareem Jackson, he's one of the bigger slot corners in the league, all of a sudden you put a quicker guy like Coleman on the inside, and just for that one game you have Coleman take that matchup and you put Strong back on the outside. So having, again, Strong and Coleman to choose from means you can match up with certain defenses differently. And that's a concept that O'Brien preaches, is having a plan for every individual defense. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, having complementary skill sets is a big part of that.
Yeah, because the first thing that came to my mind when I was thinking about that, that's what we've been doing, or the NFL's been doing with the move tight end for several years now, right?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too.
Getting them matched up against the smaller slots, and, you know, New England's the perfect example of that. Get Gronk on somebody who just can't cover him, regard if it's, you know, because of size, speed, or whatever.
Yeah, and Jimmy Graham, too.
Yeah. Hey, it's a little hard.
You can't fault it.
I mean, I think you put Gronk anywhere. He runs up 30 yards in the back, still having sprint full speed like the Arena Football League. He'll be fine. So let's get to a give viewer question we have here. And it is, which guy is from Lawrence Pearson. And it is, who do you not want to take in the first round? And he said, for each of you, give three prospects marked as true first-round picks that you want the Texans to avoid at all costs. And so, Brett, you want to go ahead and get first and get three guys you do not want to see Houston take in the first round?
Oh, man, three guys I don't want to have them take. If you count Will Fuller as a first-round lock, I don't want him. I don't want Paxton Lynch. I think, if you're going to take a developmental quarterback, you might as well take Dak Prescott later. It's not like you're getting anything different. They're both athletic, strong-arm quarterbacks that can run that aren't going to be able to start their rookie year. So you might as well just take Prescott later. It'd be a pointless pick to me to take a developmental QB with your first-round pick when you have those options. And then the third, probably Reggie Ragland. I think we already have a better version of Reggie Ragland and Benardrick McKinney. Ragland's a better tackler than McKinney was coming out of college, but McKinney's more athletic. They both have issues in coverage. They were both, you know, the true Mike linebacker, stack and shed kind of guys. So I think taking Ragland in the first round to be Cushing's heir apparent would be a complete waste. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if Ragland doesn't even go in the first round anyway, because when's the last time a linebacker that couldn't cover anybody went in the first round? Even though he continues to be mocked there for whatever reason. So those would be my three guys. Would be Lynch, Ragland, and Will Fuller.
And who are your three, BFT?
Yeah, Will Fuller for me, that's the big one. I keep making the comp to Ted Ginn. I think that's even probably a little bit – I think
Bingo.
He even got short. Yeah, it's just – because you know what? At least Ginn can return for you. Ginn is not afraid to use his body a little bit more. I really, really don't like Will Fuller. Number two for me, and we're never going to have the chance for him, but I'm really – I think this guy has bust written all over him. It's Joey Bosa. I know that's probably harsh, and I know a lot of people disagree. When I watch his YouTube videos – I like saying that instead of film – I really don't see the athleticism I want from that position. What I see is a defensive end who can set the edge – but who can't get to the quarterback. And that's not what I want. That's not, you know, look, I can go get those guys all day, but I see a 4-3 defensive end who can do a good job setting the edge, who can't get to the quarterback and can't make plays. And that's not what you want with the top five pick. It just isn't. The other guy who I'm really, who I think also has bust written all over him. And again, this might be a little harsh, is Shaq Lawson. I see a guy
Absolutely.
Who, once again, you're a 3-4. You're talking about a outside linebacker as an edge setter. I mean, you're drafting Brooks Reed on purpose. So,
absolutely. Absolutely.
No way. That's somebody I wouldn't touch.
Both of the Clemson defensive ends, Lawson or Dodd, I wouldn't touch either one of them.
So you don't like Dodd, Brett?
I don't like either one. I mean, not as first-round picks, maybe second round, but I completely agree with BFD. There is no part of me that wants Shaq Lawson in the first round. Absolutely none. He's stiff. He's slow. I mean, he is a run-stopping edge player. There is nothing about him. I mean, he's basically a lesser version of Pernell McPhee, and Pernell McPhee is a good player, but Pernell McPhee is good because he's strong as hell and he has really long arms. Lawson has 32-inch arms, so he doesn't even have McPhee's length, and he doesn't have burst off the edge. He doesn't have bend. Like, what does he have going for him? I don't understand this. Why is he being mocked as like a top 15 pick? He has nothing that makes him a franchise pass rusher. Nothing. He's got a good motor and decent hand usage and a sort of half spin move. There is nothing about him that screams first round pass rusher to me. I completely agree with BFD on that. I cannot understand this.
In all fairness, the half spin move is like the coolest move ever. I remember watching Dwight Freeney get a sack on it where he did the half spin move, and I think he killed Teddy Bridgewater in that Vikings Cardinals game last year with the half spin. It was just the coolest thing I've ever seen. My three picks are Dylon, Dylon, and Dylon, because I just don't know enough at all, and any words I say are just kind of a moot point. Let's move on to Saturday now, and I guess kind of Sunday too. You know, we touched on the first round, touched on the guys we don't like. And this kind of goes into J.J. Watt's arm brace question, where he said, there's a small chance they may trade down. Which JDU prospects intrigue you the most? And I think this also kind of ties into the needs that they have, where they have holes at safety, defensive end, center, tight end, kick returner. And they can also even use some talent outside linebacker, wide receiver, running back, nose tackle as well. So, Brad, who are some kind of day two prospects that you like to kind of fill in these needs and even just in general?
To me, Sean Davis, the corner / safety out of Maryland, who I just absolutely love. I think he's okay as a corner prospect, but I think as a safety prospect, he's the best or the second best single high safety prospect in this class behind Jalen Ramsey. He has exceptional range. He's not afraid to mix it up in the box and tackle. He's not like a thundering tackler, but he's really not afraid of it. I think he's very fluid. He's instinctual. The number one things I look for in a safety are how big is your range, and what angles do you take? And he checked off both those boxes. He's a 4'4 athlete with very fluid hips, which at the safety position is rare to find. So I think if you're trying to find a safety that you compare with Andre Howe, Sean Davis is a perfect fit.
So it sounds like whenever you're scouting safety prospects, just do the opposite of – oh, man, I feel so stupid right now. Who's the safety that they had last year they cut after 6 weeks who was just terrible? Just do the opposite of that guy.
Oh,
yeah, so I'm talking about, I can't remember. The guy who the power plays, who completely changed the defense whenever he was gone.
Denver Bronco,
Raheem Moore. So what you're saying, Brett, is if you're scouting safety, just look for the opposite of Raheem Moore is what I got out of that.
Yeah, and the thing is, what's weird about Raheem Moore is, like, his range was okay. You know, he was like a 4'5 guy. So he had okay range. He just took terrible angles, and he had horrible instincts. Whereas at least Sean Davis, he has better range than Moore. He's faster than Moore. He's more fluid than Moore. But he takes great angles, too. Ball skills could use a little bit of work, but he has better ball skills than Ramsey. But, again, he's a better safety now than Raheem Moore was when he was coming out of college. And Raheem Moore was a pretty highly regarded prospect. So I think he wouldn't be the worst pick in the world if they're trading down and trying to find – somebody else that can play on the back end.
All right. Well, BFD, are there any day two guys that you like to kind of fill these holes? And are there any guys that just really stick out to you in general that you're kind of want Houston play for, or even besides that, who are going to be really good in the future and that you can get on Saturday?
Yeah. Going back to what's been my kind of motif all season, or all off season, especially, has been for me, what I learned in 2015 was that line play is of the utmost importance. And while I can accept trading out Jeff Allen for Brandon Brooks, what I can't accept is putting Bergstrom at center, because he stuck out to me. He didn't play a whole lot of snaps. He never really has. But the dude's like, 28, 29 years old. He couldn't crack the really crappy Raiders offensive lines before they suddenly got better. That, to me, is a nightmare. When I look at the roster and I see that, I'm going, oh, crap. We're not going to get Ryan Kelly. He's going to be drafted before we're going to take this center position. And that, to me, that's an overdraft. But I would love, and even though I hate saying it so much, even though he went to Notre Dame, I would love to have Nick Martin on the team. I think we need to address the position, and to me, he's a guy who can do it. He can play safety. He's got the mean streak, so that's where I would go.
Brad, do you like Nick Martin at all?
What was that?
Do you like Nick Martin, the center of Notre Dame, at all that BFD likes?
Yeah, I mean, he's solid. He's not as good as his brother. He's not as strong as his brother. He's not as quick as his brother. But he's as smart as his brother. I think as a center, one of the most important things you can have is an ability to call protection, and he has that. I don't necessarily think he would be a Pro Bowl caliber center. I think he can be a serviceable starting center, you know, a la Ben Jones. I don't think he would be much better than that. But, you know, for some teams, that's all you really need is just a serviceable starter that doesn't suck. So he wouldn't be a bad pick. And the thing is, I don't think the Texans really want to draft a center. I think they signed Bergstrom with the intention to have him and Mance compete to be the starter, and whichever one loses will be the backup, and I think they're going to leave it at that. If you look at everybody they've interviewed, everybody they've worked out, they've only even talked to one center, reportedly, in this entire draft process. They never met with Ryan Kelly. They haven't met with anybody else. I think Glasgow from Michigan is the only one they've even talked to, and he can play either center or guard. So I think that they're just kind of ignoring that position in this draft cycle and seeing what they got in Bergstrom and Mance. And if they're both terrible, maybe they'll hit it next year. But something tells me that center is not the position they're targeting. As much as we want them to, it seems like they're not going to, at least in this draft cycle.
Yeah, and it does seem like for their backup offensive line, they like guys who can play, you know, multiple positions and have that. Like, you know, Chris Carr can play left tackle, right tackle. You saw Lam could play guard, tackle. You know, Newton can play guard and tackle. So they like having guys who can play multiple positions there. Before we get to the cheese question, I think that's all the viewer questions we have. I have one last question, and I guess I'll start off by asking and answering myself. And it's like the one thing that you really want to see in this NFL draft And so I would kind of, I really want to see the Cowboys take Laremy Tunsil so they could possibly be the first offensive line to have five Hall of Famers on it, play all at the same time. But Tunsil, Smith, Martin, LaVale Collins, and man, I'm really stupid kid in their center. Yeah, and Frederick. And all five of those guys, you could maybe, you know, see possibly be Hall of Famers one day, and they could all be on the same offensive line. So that's the one thing I'm really, you know, hoping I get to see on Thursday night. But aside from working, what are you looking forward to on the first night of the draft?
I'm just looking for us to finally be over with this circus. I just want to find out who they're picking. Like, that's it. I just want to know who they're picking so I can finally stop talking about it. I just want to be able to know who it is so I can go back and watch them even more in-depth than I already did. Because I haven't had a chance to scout as many prospects this year as I wanted to. So there's a decent chance that if they do pick somebody I haven't talked or haven't looked at, you know, I kind of get a whole fresh look at them for the first time. And I just want to know who the name is so I can know what we're getting. I can figure out how they're going to fit in the team and just finally have an answer. It's been 3 months of waiting, and I'm so sick of it.
You still have the kid with the big box on the Christmas tree, and you just want to know what's in it so you know how to spend your gift cards is what it sounds like.
It's so funny how the offseason evolves. It's like, oh, my God, okay, season's over. We get to look at the draft. Look at the draft. Look at the draft. Draft's still far away. Oh, my God, do we still have to talk about – oh, my God, it's just a month away, and we've done 853 mock drafts. Do we – and look. The Mass Hat posted another mock draft. Oh, this one from Peter King. Who the shit gives one? Oh. I love how it evolved. It's great.
The day after the draft's over, I'm going to post a 2017 mock draft the day after this one's over so I can piss everybody off.
Yeah, that's a joke. There has to be a seven-round 2017 mock draft is what it has to be. I can't believe they're doing seven-round mock drafts nowadays. Yeah, and people read them, too. Like, that mock draft I completely made up. I think like 3,500 people read it. I couldn't believe it, but people just will click on it. It's crazy.
They eat that shit up. They eat it up.
Yeah. Well, BFD, what do you want to see on Thursday night?
What do I want to see on Thursday night? Well, as always, I would like to see, you know, the Texans are very fortunate in a very large way, is that in the AFC South, we play against three of the worst managed from a personnel standpoint teams in the NFL. The Jaguars have done a pretty good job. The Titans with Ken Wisenhunt are always going to be LOL. And Grigson running the Colts. We are so fortunate. We are like in the short bus division of the NFL, and we're the kids that can spell cat without a prompt. And it's just it's so unfair at times. Because, you know, Rick Smith just blows these guys out of the water, and you guys know my opinion on Rick Smith. Not a big fan. So it's fun. So I can't wait to see how the Jags or how the Titans screw it up. That's going to probably be more day two stuff this year because there's nothing like watching a punter being drafted in the third round. But Tyson Alualu, that was awesome. So it's going to be fun.
You left out the best part of that punter. You left out the best part of that punter. You know who went a couple picks later? Russell Wilson,
that's right. Oh, man.
And the
watching
Texans
Rivers
took DeVere Posey also. Texans took DeVere Posey, so.
You got to admit, Rivers was like, oh, my, we got to take Russell Wilson here, because we were watching it live, and, yeah, that was awesome, or not. Yeah, so that's what I'm looking for. But like Brett, I can't wait to see who we pick. I mean, there's been so much speculation. We're still trying to get a feel for how the Smith-O'Brien front office works. I mean, we knew that if Gary Kubiak talked to a prospect that we were never going to draft him. That's just how it worked. So, you know, it'll be interesting. It's going to be – what I'm going to see or find most interesting, I guess, is how we're prioritizing building the team. Are we going to go wide receiver? Are we going to go skill position after what we've done? Are we going to continue to build at where I think we need to build, which is on the line? So then that's all. What's the theory? What's the strategy?
Okay. Well, last question we have, it's silly, is the top five cheeses, and you know we'll answer this question for Luke K. And mine is smoked Gouda is one. And I really don't like very much cheese after that. Probably American cheese too. And they're all kind of
your list is already shit.
The thing is, I eat meat only once a week, and you know I like cheese is fine, but I ate way too much cheese last year, and so I don't eat that much of it. But those two are the ones that really get me. But cheese is like a dessert practically to me, so I eat very rarely, and if I do eat, there's usually two things I put in my stupid mouth. But what do you like, cheese man? I know you're the one who does all the cooking.
Smoked goat gouda is excellent. I know it's not cool. I love brie. It's a gift I've handed down to my daughter, the love of brie. A very, very strong blue cheese is always going to, you know, always turns me on. It's going to sound a bit odd. Buffalo mozzarella, absolutely adore. And a good, solid white cheese, just a plain white cheese sometimes, like an asadero or mozzarella. Something that's just the plain basic cheese can sometimes be just so good, and so that's my top five.
Top five cheeses, the most important question tonight.
I'm very surprised that, I mean, I live in Southern California, and you guys live in Texas, two of the best places to get Mexican food in the entire world, and none of you chose queso blanco as your top cheese.
That's an asadero. That's the queso blanco.
Okay. Because, I mean, if you get a good authentic queso cheese and you authentically make a quesadilla, chicken quesadilla on a frying pan with that, oh my goodness. There are very few things that are better than that. So that's easily number one. I'd say smoked gouda, number two. Swiss, number three. I'm a white cheese kind of guy. Probably mozzarella, number four. And number five, cottage cheese. And if you try Cool Ranch Doritos with cottage cheese, it'll change your life. I promise.
If you put cottage cheese on your feet and let your dog lick it off, it will change your life.
That's it. Good night, everybody.
Yeah, that's how the show works. Well, that's all we have for you guys tonight. Thank you for being on again tonight, Brett. You make us go from we don't know anything to we know a little bit of something. We really appreciate that. And thanks for coming on again tonight, BFD. We'll be back on next Tuesday, maybe 7, maybe 7:30. Hopefully we can get you on again, Brett, and we'll actually break down the draft, hand out our grades, which are very important to do, and we'll do a whole draft review show. And then I guess after that, I know I'll probably write some film stuff, or I'll at least do the eye test. I know you'll probably start writing about these rookie draft prospects to be on the I-4 as well after the draft's over too. But we'll be back on next Tuesday at 7 or 7:30, and be on the lookout for that post. If you like the show, go ahead and rate and review us on iTunes. I'm Matt Weston. Thank you for listening to Bell Red Radio, and we'll talk to y'all later.
Later.
I thought it was pretty good.